Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
First this morning to this news that's emerging that the UK and the EU have reached a new agreement across a number of areas, including a 12-year deal on EU fishing boats in UK waters. Well, the agreement will be officially signed off at Lancaster House later today, where the UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer is hosting European leaders for the first UK-EU summit since Brexit 5 years ago. Both sides have been engaged in negotiations that reportedly came down to the wire last night to improve cooperation across a number of areas, including defence and security, plant and animal checks and youth mobility. Well, for more, I'm joined by Mark Paul, London correspondent with the Irish Times, and Shona Murray, Europe correspondent with Euronews. And thank you both for being with us. Mark, to you first. We know this deal is going to be officially signed off and we'll get the details officially a little later today. But there's plenty emerging as we go through the morning. And the most contentious issue where you are is likely to be this 12-year deal on fishing access for EU boats in UK waters. What can you tell us about that?
So there was a deal with the last Brexit agreement under Boris Johnson. There was a deal to allow European fishing boats access to UK waters, and that was due to run out next year. So the European side, particularly France, but also the Netherlands and other countries, wanted an extension of that, and Ireland too, because Irish boats, of course, fish in UK waters. And it seems that the UK has given an extension for 12 years until 2038. Now, that won't go down well with opponents, with Brexiteers. It won't go down well in Scotland. It'll probably be the final nail in the coffin of the Labour Party north of the English border with Scotland. But it was a big concession from Keir Starmer's side because he wants a big, wide-ranging deal, and he had to give this to get it. And there was a lot of attempts by a lot of European countries to link the fisheries deal to everything else. And so the British have given on the fisheries deal, and it seems like they've gotten quite a lot in return.
Now, the Labour Party will hope that what is being agreed today will lead to a bounce in their economy. And one of the ways they think that might happen is that they'll have access to all of this money that the EU is planning to spend on defence, €150 billion in defence loans. And Britain wants a piece of that, right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the heat this morning is about the fisheries deal, but a lot of the light will come with the Security and Defence Pact, which will essentially, I think, be the centrepiece of the agreement that's announced at about 12:30 today. There's a €150 billion rearmament fund with kind of an eye on Russia and Ukraine, and France wanted Britain to be locked out of that fund. Britain wanted access to it, and they wanted British defence companies, crucially, to be able to bid for contracts from that fund. And it seems like some sort of an agreement has been reached there. And Security and Defence is also something that it's very easy, or easier, should I say, for the British government and for Keir Starmer to sell to the British public. I mean, the British people are weary of Brexit. They're weary about deals with Brussels. They don't want to go back there to all of that pain and suffering from years before. But something like a Security and Defence Pact, Russia, Ukraine, Putin, those kind of things are much easier to explain to the British public. And that's why when they have their lunch later on, the British have decided to have the lunch with the EU leaders on a military ship in the middle of the River Thames to emphasise the security and defence aspects of the deal.
But the Tories and Reform are very upset about the fishing aspect of this. They're saying that this reverses the strategy of taking back control of laws, our border and our money. That's, you said there a moment ago, that's where the heat is it, this morning?
That is where the heat is. I mean, the Tories have tried to characterise this as a surrender summit. Nigel Farage has been out this morning saying that this will be the death of the UK's fisheries industry. I mean, anything that looks like the UK rule taking from Brussels is going to cause political damage for Labour. But I think the Labour government estimates that it's worth it in order to get some sort of a deal that may boost trade between Britain and Europe, because that is still Europe's or the UK's biggest trading partner, and get the UK economy moving. Because everything comes down to the British economy, which is flaccid at the moment. If they can get that moving, then I think the Labour government will feel it has some sort of momentum.
OK, well, Mark, stay with us. And Shona, as I said, is with us as well. And Shona, you're looking at this from the EU perspective. It was the fisheries deal that was kept people out of bed all night last night.
That's right, all night. But remember, the UK was initially offering 4 years extension and the EU pushed it to 12. So you can see that they did make quite a concession there. But remember, what the UK has now is access to the EU's internal market for agriculture and fisheries. And remember that when you look at sort of the reports we've seen since Brexit, a lot of the fishing industry you know, was really hampered by the fact that they couldn't sell fresh fish into the EU anymore because they had to go through huge administrative burdens. Now, with this SBS deal, which is a phytosanitary deal, it means that the fishery and the agriculture industry can now export into the EU like they did before. But of course, they will have to abide by EU regulations, which we know was obviously a big problem during Brexit. So there will be dynamic alignment, but it does mean that they can export. So therefore, the argument is that you would be supporting the EU or the UK fishery and agricultural markets. And of course, then, as we heard there, the security and defence partnership is a key part of this. But it is a win for the French that they have the 12-year extension. And there's also been a guarantee that this part would be legally binding, and that a new UK government, let's say the Tories get into government in 5 or 6 years' time, that they wouldn't be able to rip it up as well. But so the EU's position is that they feel this is a win-win situation for both sides. The other thing that will probably catch people out as well in the UK is that there will be oversight by the European Court of Justice, because this, of course, is access to the EU single market.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be interesting to see, you know, what the reaction is to that. There's also some visas now that will be issued for young people. So there'll be mobility between Europe and the UK.
That's right. So they have a youth mobility scheme and also the ability to rejoin Erasmus, which is a programme for students. And this, again, will be limited and be only for specific under 30-year-olds. And it's just another deal that the UK has with another sort of entity. I mean, they do it with Australia and others, but it has been painted, I've seen this morning, as, you know, a smaller version of access to the single market and freedom of movement, which it is not. It just helps young people. Because one thing that's absent from this deal, which many people have been calling for, the likes of Elton John and so on, is for artists to have a good access to the EU market, so they could play concerts again without the burden of having, you know, a visa, you know, having to sign up for visas and so on, which is obviously very difficult because you have to do it member state by member state. So the services industry is not looked after here at all. It is a very small deal. I would also say that in relation to the access to the UK for the defence industry into safe into the €150 billion loan, there will have to be a contribution to the EU budget as well. The amount hasn't been worked out, but they will have to contribute.
Is there a sense in Europe that this heralds the beginning of a new dawn, a new relationship between the UK and the EU, Shona?
Yeah, this is exactly it. It's really turning the chapter from the real bitterness of the last few years throughout Brexit, and a bigger picture moment, given the geopolitical situation we're in now, where the UK and the EU have to work together. And one of the reasons why the EU is very supportive of the UK doing the security and defence partnership, it means that UK defence industry can help the European Union to build its defence and security in the middle of war, obviously, on the continent, and also the US pulling away from European security, because the capacity isn't there for the EU defence industry alone. So it does need the UK to partner alongside it. And also they'll do things like joint procurement. So, for example, three countries could work together on particular radar systems or defence systems or ammunition, and bringing down the cost of that. So it works both ways. But yeah, more importantly, this really is about the European continent working together again, knowing and recognising that the US isn't really there anymore for the moment anyway.
But Leo Varadkar was pointing out at the weekend that there are limits to this because of the red lines, which, you know, Keir Starmer has been at pains to say they still exist, and he's not willing to change it. No single market, no customs union. And Leo Varadkar says that really puts a stop on how far they can go here.
Oh yeah, of course, because I mean the UK is a very much a services industry. So like I mentioned earlier, the artists will still have to have the burden of filling out visas if they want to play in Germany and France and so on. You know, similarly, the financial industry is hampered as well. And also, and then, you know, the UK does not have a say at the table. It's like Norway or one of the other countries that's part of the Security Defence Partnership, but doesn't really have it doesn't have any influence over, let's say, if there's new regulations the EU want to apply when it comes to agriculture or fisheries, the UK will have to accept that. So the arguments over Brexit still exist, but this softens it somehow. But the UK's red lines around the single market, freedom of movement, and the movement of capital and goods and so on still exists. And if you're not in the agricultural industry, other industries are still going to be hampered by not being able to access the richest market, which is just close to their their island.
And Mark, British people will be interested to hear that it seems that border queues is on the agenda here as well, because the UK, we hear, has been pushing for UK passport holders to be able to use the EU gates to get through, the e-gates in particular, which are coming into operation for people who live within the EU.
That's right. Well, I mean, look, it all comes down to everybody going on holidays. I mean, one of the things that British people have noticed in their daily lives from Brexit or in their yearly lives is that when they go on holidays, they have to join particular queues and queue up for a long time to get into European Union countries. So the British government has been hinting that there may be some sort of a move towards basically allowing British passport holders to use e-gates so that they don't have to queue up for an actual physical immigration officer, which should speed up their entry into Spain and Italy and France when they're going on their holidays. And that's, again, something, it's a kind of a sweetener. If that transpires in the final agreement, that's a kind of a sweetener, a pill that the British government can take to ordinary people to say, look, I know we've gone back and we've done a deal with Brussels and we're talking to them again, even though we've left because of Brexit, but these are the sort of small little wins we're getting for your daily life. It's a kind of a popularity move, a sugar pill that Keir Starmer will be able to give to British people that will hopefully reduce some of the criticism from his point of view that he gets over doing another deal with Brussels.
And Seana, how mindful is the EU of that very point, you know, the reaction to this deal when it's released at 12:30 today? Is the EU watching that to see how much heat Keir Starmer gets?
Yeah, they've been really conscious about this, particularly because of the UK local elections recently. And even when the negotiations were ongoing over the last few weeks, you know, when they were inching towards an agreement, I spoke to many people involved in the negotiations who said, well, we don't know because we have to see what happens in the local elections and where Keir Starmer can go with this. But he does want to be brave. So they have been. And also I listened to BBC today, or BBC Sounds today, the Today Show, and they did an interview with Kaya Kallas, who's the EU foreign policy chief, who's really, really concentrating on security and defence and Ukraine. And all they asked her about really at the start was fisheries. Mm-hmm. And it's not her area. I mean, that's a commission perspective. It's a really line by line negotiation thing that you maybe talk to Ursula von der Leyen or something about. She doesn't do that. But they could, I think even the tone of her response was saying, you know, why are you asking me about fisheries? I'm here to talk about our defence and the coalition, the winning, and how we're going to work together in this geopolitical crisis that we're going through. So definitely, and speaking to other people involved in negotiations this morning, they're saying, look, we're concerned that the British side or the British press won't see the bigger picture here. Because, I mean, fisheries, if you're talking about, you know, the fishery industry being destroyed here, it's Brexit that did that in lots mm-hmm. of ways, because we saw all of the fresh fish basically rotting while fishermen were trying to write out forms of detail in order to get the fish across into the European market. But by the time that happened, often fish was rotting. So, you know, they're kind of saying, well, why can't they see that this is actually going to help the industry rather than destroy it?
All right, we'll see what the reaction is as it emerges over the course of the afternoon. Seana, thank you for being with us. But Paula, Mark, I want to ask you about another story in the headlines where you are, because we are expecting an announcement at some point today that Gary Lineker, the Match of the Day presenter, is going to leave the BBC. Now, this follows the controversy towards the end of last week and over the weekend over a social media post that he shared. So what are we expecting to happen today?
So we're expecting an announcement actually at around about the same time of the EU deal, funnily enough, so it may bury this bad news for the BBC and Gary Lineker, but that Gary Lineker will exit the BBC. His career with the BBC will finish once he does his final Match of the Day at the end of this season. He had been scheduled, he had already announced that he was leaving Match of the Day, but he was supposed to stay on to do the BBC's World Cup coverage next year and also to do its FA Cup coverage. But as you mentioned there, last week he shared a video by a pro-Palestinian activist group on his Instagram page, and that video contained an image of a rat, which is known as an historic slur against Jewish people. Gary Lineker deleted the posting. He apologised for that, and he said how horrified he was by it. But it just seems it's the final straw, I think, for the BBC with Gary Lineker after a long list of controversies over whether or not he was sort of, I suppose, pushing the boundaries of BBC impartiality on a lot of things. Mm-hmm. You know, he is is the BBC's highest paid broadcaster. He has a responsibility, but he also has a very big platform of his own. But it seems like now his career with the BBC is now coming to an end, and that should be announced in or around 12 or half 12, which is the same time as the EU deal, and it'll probably get buried beneath that.
And this isn't the first time that there has been controversy around his social media use, as you've mentioned, Mark. And the point has been made that all of the staff and contractors and presenters at the BBC will have signed up to its guidance on personal use for social media. And he has flouted that rule. And there are staff at the BBC and other commentators, people who've worked there in the past, who've managed him in the past, who've just said this is unsustainable.
Right. I mean, there are these impartiality rules that BBC staff have to sign up to. And I suppose, look, Gary Lineker would obviously have his supporters in the world of sport and in the world of BBC. But I think a lot of ordinary BBC journalists are kind of grind their teeth at him a little bit, as if there's a little bit of special treatment for Gary Lineker. That's certainly the criticism that is portrayed of him. I mean, as you've alluded to there, I mean, repeatedly he has made comments and that have been perceived as political, that have been perceived as critical of the government, that he's made comments about world affairs, about Israel and about other conflicts around the world, that ordinary BBC journalists just don't get an opportunity to say. And maybe they don't want to, but if they did, they would get their knuckles wrapped. And the perception is that Gary Lineker has been allowed to do this, that he's become in one sense bigger than the organisation itself, at least in terms of his ability to say things freely. But it seems like, you know, he's finally come a cropper with this latest video that he shared by this pro-Palestinian activist group. And it's a kind of, I suppose, it's a sad end in a sense, in a way, to his BBC career. But look, I mean, he has his own burgeoning business empire. I mean, you know, he owns an enormous podcasting company. So look, the wolf will be kept from the door. But it's a kind of a bitter taste to the end of his broadcasting career with the BBC.
Yeah, and I mean, we don't know who made the decision, if this is what's going to happen, that his broadcasting with the BBC has finished. But it certainly looks as though the BBC made the call ultimately on this. And finally...
Yeah. The BBC was under a lot of pressure. I mean, there is a bigger issue here, and the BBC is under pressure generally about impartiality. It was under a lot more pressure probably under the previous Conservative government, but it's still under pressure in the British media, the British press, and particularly the right-wing British printed press. So they had to have been seen to take a stand. I mean, you know, Danny Cohn, a Jewish man, but also a former head, a senior executive in BBC, I mean, he was out criticising Gary Lineker for this and criticising the BBC for it. So the organisation, I think, had to make some sort of a stand, and this is a result of it.
Mark, thank you very much. Mark Paul there, London correspondent with the Irish Times.